Strange Ride is brought to you commercial-free through the generous support of our patrons. Visit StrangeRideShow.com and click on Donate to help keep the history of the weird on the digital airwaves.
There is so much Star Wars content out in the wide world. Some of it is loved, some of it is hated, but there is one piece of Star Wars media that is so hated by its creator that it was almost lost media. If it wasn't for fans making bootleg VCR copies during its one and only broadcast, it would be lost to time. I'm talking, of course, about the infamous Star Wars Holiday Special, a variety show set in the Star Wars universe that was also meant to sort of celebrate Thanksgiving/Christmas. George Lucas was so mortified by how this special turned out that he has tried to remove any trace of its existence from the Earth. And because of that resistance, it has since become a cult classic amongst Star Wars fans. But how did the Star Wars Holiday Special end up so bad? Today, I will be going over how the special was made and its content so you can be spared from having to watch it yourself. Welcome to Strange Ride, where I tell the smartest man I know the weirdest things I know. My name is Savannah Barrett, and I will be your guide today, but you're not the only ones going on this ride. I have with me my friends Luke Kinnaman and Andrew Mims.
Hello.
Greetings and salutations.
And then, of course, I have the smartest man I know, Rob C. Thompson of Occult Confessions fame.
All right, I got a question for you all, and I really need to know the answer to this. Will you light the sky on fire?
No, not Depends. After... I went from liking Jefferson Starship to having mixed feelings.
No, I'm going to talk you back into it. You just give me a chance.
It's like, that has to be a Starship reference, but I'm like, I don't know what it means, so I'm going to stay
silent.
I couldn't understand a word that was being said when I was watching it.
Will you light the sky on fire?
That was the one that played during the special?
Yeah.
That's what they said.
You had the Imperial Guard who was bopping his finger slightly.
Yes, it's so good.
This episode was suggested to me forever ago by a listener. So shout out to Dalin, D-A-L-L-I-N. I'm so sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong. But
Dalian?
D-A-L-L-I-N.
Dalin.
Dalin sounds like the name of a Star Wars character, so we'll go with that.
Yeah,
they sent it to me like forever ago, and I was like, I definitely want to talk about this, but I'm going to wait until Christmas time to talk about it. But anyway, I guess let's not waste any more time, because Rob is like so excited to talk about Jefferson Starship again.
I thought I couldn't do it again. I talked about him for 3 hours, and yet here we are, and I get to do it some
spoiler
more.
Spoiler alert, they're in the Star Wars Holiday Special, in case you had no idea. All right, ready for the pledge?
Yep.
Let's do it.
I solemnly commit myself to keep my hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the vehicle at all times while on this strange ride. It's weird we're recording this not together in person, and it sounded like we were all off doing it at different times. I don't know if it sounds better on the actual recording, but...
Probably not. Yeah,
you gotta sync it.
Okay. Oh, great. Well... So to get us started, let's go back to 1978. Obviously, everybody knows that Star Wars was released the year before and became a smash hit, Star Wars being Star Wars A New Hope, but at first it was just called Star Wars, but then A New Hope was added to the title of it. It became clear to everyone, including George Lucas, that they had a phenomenon on their hands, and they wanted to build off of that as much as they could. Lucas especially wanted to create more movies and do spin-offs based off the expansive lore that he had created for Star Wars. In order to make sure that he maintained creative control over Star Wars' sequel, he decided that he would just fund the movie himself, especially considering the boatloads of money that they made from the box office alone from the first movie.
Not to mention the toys.
Oh, right. Yeah, that too.
The smartest decision ever made was Lucas keeping the rights.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Especially because I feel like I've learned that Lucas, much to his detriment and his benefit, is a kind of a control freak, it seems, especially when it comes to Star Wars. So maybe not a control freak, but he's very
he's very anal
of
about
his
it,
IP. Yes. Yeah. However, making a bigger and better sequel to Star Wars was starting to cost a lot more money than anticipated. The budget for A New Hope was $11 million, and Empire's was $30.5 million. And so the rising costs came with rising anxiety of whether or not the Star Wars characters would remain relevant while he worked on a sequel. And I also read that, like, something that suggested that major blockbusters sequels, major blockbuster sequels weren't really a thing. Like, movies had sequels and stuff like that, but, like, it wasn't like, it was like they were the same amount of budget and stuff like that. It wasn't like Star Wars where it was bigger and better in every way kind of thing. So it felt like that this was a risky project to be putting so much money into it. And then also, like he's, like I said, they were kind of worried that the Star Wars characters would fade out of relevancy before the next movie came out. And so Lucas thought to help keep the characters relevant that they could release some content to help keep people thinking about them. The cast appeared on many variety shows and in different advertisements as well to help keep them relevant. This is when CBS approached him and said, hey, why don't we do a Star Wars variety show? We can set it in your universe and release it around Thanksgiving time so that it encourages kids to want Star Wars toys for Christmas. And Lucas was busy with working on Empire, so he didn't really have time to do it himself. But CBS said, don't worry, we'll handle it.
Famous Lucas agreed. Last words.
Yes. Yes. Lucas agreed with this, but his only stipulation being that he wanted the special to be about the Wookiees. The big, giant, hairy, Bigfoot-esque creatures that do not speak English and are never subtitled. And also, not just any Wookiees, but Chewbacca's family, who we had no idea even existed. Lucasfilms would go to a few production meetings for the holiday special. And I say Lucasfilms here because I don't want to make it seem like it was all George Lucas making these decisions. Like, it was him and his production company, Lucasfilms, as well. So they went to a few production meetings for the holiday special. But with everything that came with making Empire Strikes Back, they just didn't have the time to keep up with the production. So they let CBS handle it. But it was said to have not seemed so bad in the beginning. But then I guess once Lucas stopped showing up, they were like, okay, let's change all these things. And it seems like the entire production, from recruiting actors to filming to the actual finished project, was just completely cursed. It seemed like none of the original Star Wars actors wanted to reprise their roles for this holiday special, but all of them did eventually. Carrie Fisher apparently said that she would only do it if she was able to sing a song. Harrison Ford, yes. Did you have something to say?
I didn't know
she
that.
Did well.
That's interesting.
Yeah, she sounded great.
Did. Yeah. Yeah. My one friend, Jordan, he knows like everything about Star Wars. And apparently she was like, I want to show that I'm a very talented singer and I'm not going to be able to do that in Star Wars. But in a Star Wars Christmas special, I would. So yeah, I will do it, but only if I get to sing. And then, of course, Harrison Ford was like the hardest get for this. I think if there's one thing that all Star Wars fans know is that Harrison Ford probably hates Star Wars more than anyone. So Lucas had to practically beg Ford to do this special, which he reluctantly agreed to. And that shows in his performance.
Yeah, he's always like trying to run away. He's like, no, okay, here, I dropped him off. I gotta get out of here.
Really, seriously. And then he sounds so bored. Like his mouth is barely moving. It's like he's asleep. It's so interesting. You can just tell how much hatred he has for this role. And he's like, I wish I wasn't in this stupid sci-fi movie.
Like, the best part is in the introduction as they're introducing the cast and it like pans to Mark Hamill and he does the very like 80s, 90s. Like smiles at the camera, which for anyone listening, I did that on the camera and you can't see. But when Harrison Ford, it comes to his, it's a very like disgruntled, like he's not paying attention, looks up for a second and then turns his head away again.
He just can't be bothered. He phones it in when he tells the Wookiees how much he loves them. He's like, you guys are like family to me, like seriously.
And then he tries to leave again.
Yeah, and then he's out of there. He's like, yeah, fuck this.
I love you guys, but like... meters running.
Yeah, I can't celebrate Christmas with you. Sorry. So, despite them having trouble recruiting arguably the most important characters for a Star Wars special, the cast is completely star-studded. Like Bea Arthur, like one of the Golden Girls, was talked into doing it. And yeah. She later said that she only agreed to it because her son was like a mega fan of A New Hope.
And she was, I think, Maud at this point. That was her TV character. So she had a big show before Golden Girls. I think it was called Maud. And that show is best known, FYI, just for being, I think, the first show where a character had an abortion.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. As an older woman. Like, she was a woman in her 40s, I think, is the character she was playing. So not a Golden Girl yet. But, yeah, she and her husband, the character playing her husband, decided... what am I saying? The character of her husband... decided that they didn't want to keep whatever, you know, the child that they were having.
It would have been a Wookiee baby, so, like, I understand.
Would have been a Wookiee baby, yeah. I also mentioned to Savannah, Bea Arthur appears in the film version of MAME with Lucille Ball, so she was also a bit of a musical theater person.
Yeah, she did great.
So it's a great
scene. Who are the other, like, because I personally, I mean, Bea Arthur was the only person that I knew, but you said, like, the first black woman to ever win a Tony was also in it, and then the comedy guy.
I can't name her off the top of my head. She's not, I'm not like a big fan, but Harvey Korman is a big deal. Harvey Korman played three different characters in the Star Wars special, which was delightful. And Harvey Korman was one of Carol Burnett's main actors, so one of her core. So Harvey Korman was like, he was one of the best known sketch comedy artists of the 70s. He was a go-to guy. He was like the straight man often. But, you know, other than that, this time he's not playing the straight man, obviously. He's got, like, four arms trying to cook a souffle and things like
okay.
that. But,
and then the guy who played the shopkeep is also, like, a super...
That's Art Carney.
Okay, Art Carney.
Art Carney was one of the Honeymooners, so he is TV royalty. He is the original, right? The Honeymooners was one of the first shows ever, first sitcoms, and they got Art Carney to play the biggest part, I think, in the whole special.
Yeah, and then...
The biggest spoken part.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then they got... Oh, yeah.
Don't you disrespect my boy Lumpy.
Or Itchy, for that.
Or Itchy.
And then it was, like, Circus Dole or, like, whatever was, like, the circus act, and Jefferson Starship, like we said, was also a musical performance in it. So, like, they got all these huge people to be a part of it. It seemed like the Star Wars actors themselves were the ones that were all like, no, we don't want to do this. But everybody, I don't know. It didn't seem like they necessarily had trouble convincing all these other famous people to do it. But anyway.
Because it was Star Wars. It was a major product, right? And they're also TV actors. They don't say no.
Oh.
Like, you're going to write Harvey Korman a check. Do you know how many specials Harvey Korman did that year? Like, I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm confident. These guys were doing specials constantly. Like, it was a different era, too, Savannah. In the 70s, like, we don't really have this as much anymore. Or maybe we do. We just call it the X Factor. But in lieu of the X Factor, they would just have these celebrity-studded specials constantly. That's what the 70s were all about. Every weekend, you would have a different, like, you know, freaking... Bob Hope is turning 60. We're going to have a big special and all his friends are going to come out. And you know what I mean?
Okay.
It's all the time.
So that, that makes a little bit more sense to me why all these super famous celebrities at the time were all like, yeah, I'm down to do this weird, weird thing. I guess it wasn't weird back then. So
Carol Burnett was probably the best comedy show, period. However, you know, Sonny and Cher had a variety show. The Smothers Brothers had a variety show in the late 60s. You know, the Gong Show. There was all these different variety shows.
I wish Carol Burnett was in the holiday special now.
Oh, my God.
That would have been awesome.
What role could she have played?
No,
she could have been Lumpy.
No. But anyway, so the filming of this special began in August of 1978. And remember, it releases in November in 1978. So the special actually went through two directors as well, which I can't imagine is very common for a TV special like this.
No, why? Why would you want to do that?
So the first director was David Acomba, who filmed most of the variety show performances. The cantina scene was apparently an absolute nightmare to film. And the cantina scene is the scene that features Bea Arthur. She plays like a barkeep at a shop. I mean, a bar that looks just like the Mos Eisley Cantina from the very first movie. And so they apparently filmed it all in one day, but literally one day, like from 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. the next day.
Oh, shit.
Whoa.
Yes.
Bea Arthur is badass.
I know. And then, listen, so it definitely had the most actors out of any of the scenes in the entire thing, because most of the scenes feature like one actor, maybe like three max, except for the very end. So, but they also had everybody in strange mask and makeup in order to help fill out the bar with all sorts of weird Star Wars aliens. And because of that, all of these masks, like these actors had a lack of oxygen. So actors were literally like passing out left and right. And then it was taking like 2 hours for some people to get into their makeup and stuff, and they had to have a nurse on set in order to like be feeding people oxygen so that people like didn't die while they were filming this scene. And then that seemed to be a reoccurring theme as well in this special, because all of the actors that are in the main Wookiee costumes, the three main Wookiee family members, they had to stop and take a break every hour because the suits were suffocating them, and they also had to be like fed oxygen.
But the Star Wars actors, like the cantina scene, they also had a bunch of funky masks. And Chewbacca, right? What's that guy's name?
Yeah. Peter Mayhew.
Michael Monahue.
Peter Mayhew.
Peter Mayhew. Peter Mayhew.
names are not my forte.
But he could breathe,
so apparently,
right, for all those movies?
These were like special suits that they made especially for the holiday special, these Wookiee suits in particular, because they were going to be the main focus, and then Wookiees don't speak English, and then it's like a Star Wars thing that Wookiees are just never subtitled, so they weren't allowed to subtitle them, according to George Lucas. So they needed the faces to be more expressive, so they made the suits in this special way for the faces to be more expressive, and whatever they must have did there, I'm thinking, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm thinking that's why the suits, they just, like, was there wasn't enough airflow in them. And then I also read too that they were insanely heavy, and that the woman that plays Lumpy, which is Chewbacca's son, she said that she lost like 10 pounds and was constantly like sweating because of how heavy and how hot the suit, the Wookiee costume was that she was wearing.
Was it Frank Oz? Was he involved, do you know, in the original Peter Mayhew outfit?
I don't know.
Because he did Yoda,
yeah,
right?
I think he was brought on especially for Yoda.
Yeah, that's what I think,
okay,
too.
So he didn't, because that's a Henson studio thing for sure. That's a Frank Oz skill to be able to fit you in, like Big Bird and stuff.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem, I don't know. Peter Mayhew never has seemed to have issues being in the actual like Chewbacca suit that they use for these movies and stuff. But I cannot tell you. I know that they used like, but because Lucas was using most of his like really nice stuff to film Empire Strikes Back while they were filming this. So I think what happened is that they were using the cheapo stuff. And
the leftovers,
or making their own really cheap stuff, and all these actors were literally suffocating like on the set of this.
I'm still not convinced that was actually Mark Hamill.
Oh yes, well, we'll talk about that in a moment.
I love this conspiracy theory.
Yeah, but let me. We'll talk about him in a moment because I actually have a section where I talk about that a little bit. But so after filming that that 24-hour long day in the cantina scene, Okomba ended up leaving the show, and he apparently also had issues with the two producers who were mainly in charge of the shoot. So the second director, Steve Binder, came into an absolute disaster. The show was way over budget and way behind schedule and at risk of getting canceled altogether, but he managed to get the thing filmed. Due to schedule conflicts, Binder wasn't able to edit the final product like he was used to, and that task was left to the producers, Ken and Mitzi Welsh, who had never actually edited anything before. This was their first time editing anything. Ever.
I don't want to say it shows, but...
It does show.
So, when Lucas was shown the final product, he was absolutely mortified. I mean, he wanted to shut the entire thing down, but at that point, it was too late to stop it from being broadcasted. I believe because it had already been advertised at that point, and they had already filmed and edited it, so they were like, well, we might as well release it. It's not that bad. it was only broadcasted in America and Canada once, on November 17th, 1978. It also was apparently broadcasted about a year later in Sweden for whatever reason, but I don't know why.
Wacky Swedes.
I know, and it was called...
I love them. I love them.
It had a different name. It wasn't the holiday special. It was called Star Wars and Peace. Like, that's what
nice.
It was called.
I like that.
I love it.
The special, or that day, about 13 million viewers tuned in to watch, which is not a lot. And the special apparently didn't even rank in the top 10 of things most watched that night. And viewership dropped in a half about an hour into what was a 2-hour long special with commercials.
Yeah. Is it because of the 10-minute introduction where it's just Wookiees
These people lasted an hour, but I think that's honestly when I would have checked out too. Like, I would have been like, what the hell am I watching? Like, I just, like, nothing is happening. I'm going to go watch a different variety show. Or there was like something else. Love Boat had more viewers than
it
that night.
Love Boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
And so, yeah, I was like, I'm tuning in the Love Boat. I don't understand what's happening here. Especially as a child. I cannot even imagine a child being vaguely interested by what is happening in this special. It's so boring. But
my understanding is that Lucas didn't want to subtitle the opening sequence because he thought if people turned on the special and saw subtitles, they would immediately say, this is boring, and tune out.
Hmm. I also feel like it's just like this, I feel like it's got to be one of Lucas's weird Star Wars rules that he has. I don't know this for a fact, but Wookiees, I don't think in any movie ever are ever subtitled, and characters react to them, and I feel like that's almost part of the Star Wars bit, is like, you don't know what Chewie says, but Han reacts to him, so you're vaguely able to pick up what Chewie says. And
but
that's
it's
part
Chewie
of the
and Han. Not Chewie, Chewie 2, Chewie 3, and Chewie 4 all having a conversation for
Chewie. Yeah, I hear
you. Was subtitled in Solo, but that was post-Lucas.
Oh.
No, are you serious?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember that. I haven't watched Solo.
It was only
one
scene. It was only like when Han and Chewie first met, like when they were like in the mud and stuff.
I think you're right. That's blasphemy. Not that I had to sit through the entire Star Wars Holiday Special without subtitles, and then they're allowed to subtitle him in that movie. Are you serious?
Yep.
And I liked Solo. So. But yes, where did I even leave off? I'm ready to talk about my feelings about this thing already.
Got it.
How good they are. Right?
Yes, how much I loved this holiday special. It has since November 17th, 1978, ever been aired again, except for that one time in Sweden, and never officially released. The only part of it that has been officially released, and you can actually watch on Disney Plus right now, is an animated sequence that happens in the middle of it, which is one of Boba Fett's first appearances. This is entitled The Story of the Faithful Wookiee. So I'm going to do a little Star Wars myth-busting today here, folks. So many people claim that the holiday special is Boba Fett's very first appearance ever, but that is not true. Earlier that year, there was a parade in Marin County, California that Lucasfilms was a part of because that is where the Skywalker Ranch is located. The town must have like asked them to be a part of it, and they did. So this parade is actually the true first appearance of Boba Fett. There is a video of him as a costume character walking down the parade route next to Darth Vader. And so, yeah, fun fact. See, I know a lot about Star Wars.
Didn't they, like,
to be like, actually, that's not his first appearance. It's the parade that nobody else saw.
Didn't they, like, advertise him, like, originally as, like, a super stormtrooper? I think I remember that for the, like, parade.
Oh, I have no idea. I have a video of the parade that was said to be by my friend Jordan, who's the super Star Wars fan, but there was no sound to it. And I saw him walking down the road, and I was like, that's cool. And it looks, I mean, it is. It's Boba Fett.
So. Was he sporting a very intimidating, like, princess wave? Did he practice at parades?
He was holding his blaster, you know, in his intimidating way that he does in the movie. And there is another myth that I want to address. In the holiday special, Mark Hamill, who plays Luke Skywalker, is absolutely caked up in face makeup. Like he's like, it's, you could see layers and layers of this makeup on him. It's honestly insane. And the internet started a rumor that the reason that he was covered in this thick makeup was because he was trying to hide scars that he had acquired in a very recent car accident. And I looked into this because I thought the story was really interesting, but it turns out that it's just simply not true. Mark Hamill did get into a car accident, but in January of 1977, and his only injury was a broken nose that he said that the doctor set back for him, and then he was all set. Like, he didn't have to do plastic surgery, he didn't have any scars or anything. And so now I can't tell you why that he was caked up in all of that makeup, but it isn't because of a car accident. But yes, that's what Mims was alluding to earlier, is like, you see Mark Hamill, and he's like, it's like high school theater level of like foundation. He's like almost orange, and he's wearing like eyeliner too.
I can put on eyeliner better than that.
Which, if he was on a stage like 30 feet away from the audience, it looked fine.
But the film that the scene that he films is him like one where he walks directly to the camera and talks into it because it's a phone call essentially. So it's like, why is he wearing all of this makeup and his hair is cut kind of weird and stuff?
Yeah, he has a freaking bowl cut.
It does not look like Mark Hamill, but it definitely is.
CGI Luke that we got in the end of The Mandalorian Season 2 looks more like Mark Hamill than Mark Hamill looked like Mark Hamill.
I agree with that. And so, on top of that, there's also a rumor that like the reason that there's that Wampa attack scene in Empire Strikes Back in the very beginning, like he's in the cave with the snow creature and it scratches him or whatever, people made the rumor, too, that they added that in to account for his new scars and stuff like that. That's also just not true.
Makes sense, though. It's a nice way to piece things together.
Yeah, I mean, if it was true, I think that would be a super interesting story. But I watched an interview with Mark Hamill, and he was like, no, I had a broken nose, and that was that. So George Lucas has come out and said that if he had the time and a sledgehammer, he'd track down every copy of the holiday special and destroy it. Carrie Fisher even quipped that she got herself a copy to put on at the end of a party when she wanted to get her guests to leave. And Harrison Ford claims to have never seen it. And Anthony Daniels even called it a turd, Anthony Daniels being the man who is inside of C-3PO's suit. The cast weren't the only ones to hate it. The general public also agreed that it is just terrible. And before watching it myself, I thought people were exaggerating. I was sure that it was bad, but I don't think anything can prepare you for just how bad it truly is. It is one of the most baffling things that I have ever watched. After I finished watching it, I literally sat in silence and stared at my wall for like a half an hour to try and process what I had just seen. And I still sometimes have trouble finding the words to describe what happened. And we have to thank the people who made illegal recordings of it that night during its one broadcast, because without them, none of us would be able to see what is truly one of the worst pieces of media I have ever watched.
Those are the true heroes. Can you imagine? What are the odds? I know. It airs one time.
I know. They had the foresight to be like, oh, it's Star Wars. Like, I'm going to want to watch this again. And then they were like, what?
I think I think the one that we watched was some recording from Dayton, Ohio.
Yes. That's what Savannah sent us. Yeah.
That was Mim sent it to me because I was like, where do I? I was like, I don't want to click on any like links on my computer. Is there a safe one that we could watch it? And then it was just on YouTube. Yeah, so you can go watch it on YouTube right now. I don't recommend it necessarily, but...
At 1.5 speed, I found it very tolerable.
Yeah, Rob cheated. I watched it in its entirety, the way it was meant to be watched, and Rob watched it fast.
Yep, and it felt good. I slowed it down when I liked it, and I did like it sometimes. I really did.
I can agree with that. I can, but I think
it's
overall...
It's the pieces of corn in a turd. It's
okay.
Like, there are parts that are edible, I guess.
Ew. Okay, yeah.
So, and I didn't think about it afterwards because I was, you know, hyper-focused on the things I enjoyed, which were the variety portions more than anything else. But the ending didn't make any sense. You're right. If you try to figure out what the hell happens at the end where they all beam into some alternate universe and Han Solo says, I have to run off, but then isn't he there at the place where they go?
And so is Luke and Leia.
And C-3PO
so is Leia.
And R2-D2.
Even though... They don't seem to have magic balls because they're not Wookiees to take them to the alternate dimension.
Right?
No, we just watched the Wookiees just slowly kind of parade.
Yeah,
there,
like
right?
We don't know
in the space.
Who those other Wookiees are either. Because there was definitely more than four.
Right. And they're all walking through space into a giant sunshine or something. Right?
And then end up
It's very much like they should have taken the eagles. Why didn't they fly the eagles to Mordor? Why didn't they just walk to the sphere, like the glowing sphere, and then they would have met up with Chewie and then done.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Problem solved.
Even going back.
They walk, carry sand.
If they knew about the Wookiee teleport ball. Why didn't Leia just send the droids to Kashyyyk, right? And then, bypassing everything. Like, they could have just got it to the Wookiees. The Wookiees bring the Death Star plans, and then, like, they don't have to worry about all that shit.
Let's do all our communicating at the Tree of Life or whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
That's what it's called. Good job, Rob.
Oh, there you go. Well, it's like isn't that a Legend of Zelda thing?
That's the Deku Tree. Yeah.
Deku Tree.
You should know that. So.
Yeah, you would think, but I don't remember the names of any of that stuff.
I just think before we start talking more about like what we feel about it, and I'm going to go through the plot so people who haven't seen it yet, all of that will vaguely make sense to you, at least.
I don't know if it'll help.
There'll be slightly more context. But I think it's so funny thinking about how the rumor of this thing spread, because at first it was just those couple of VCR copies. Like, there wasn't really the internet to put these things on, so people at first were just like trading and burning VCR copies and selling them to one another and stuff. And then like people would have to like go onto the internet, like once the internet was more so a thing, and then like download it onto their computer to then download it and burn it onto a CD in order to even watch it. So I'm thankful that in this time period, I didn't have to go through all that pain in the ass in order to watch this thing.
It's the one segment from the Weird Al White and Nerdy video where he goes up to a drug dealer and buys a VHS copy of it.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's what you had to do. And you had to make sure George Lucas wasn't watching out for you, because he'd probably shoot you.
And you have to figure this Dayton, Ohio version that we watched is probably one of only a handful that exist, and the person who uploaded it isn't the person who recorded it, right?
I doubt
it. Most likely. It was probably a tape copy of a tape copy.
Yeah.
Right. It's amazing. Like, when you think about the way those things degrade, it is amazing that we got to watch this at all in 2024.
It really is. And I'm thankful that I have had the opportunity to watch it. I just don't think I'll ever watch it again. But
it's important to preserve media.
It is.
Even if that media is bad.
Yeah. It's, oh, man. And this is so fascinating. Like, they should teach this film in film schools on how to not make a movie. But so we finally reached the point where I'd like to share with you my viewing experience of having watched the Star Wars Holiday Special. The general plot of the Holiday Special is that Chewbacca admits this rebellion is trying to get back home to his family that lives on the planet of Kashyyyk to celebrate the Wookiee Holiday Life Day. However, because he and Han Solo, who is taking Chewie home, are some of the most wanted rebels, the Empire is on their tails and trying to capture them. The special focuses on Chewie's family, his wife Mala, his son Lumpy, and his father Itchy, as they prepare for Life Day celebrations and await Chewbacca's arrival. What I found watching the special is that its biggest sin is that it is just insanely boring. If I had to come up with what I thought the most boring movie ever would be, it would be this. A family who is watching TV. And we watch TV with them. Then the family has chores to do. So we watch them do chores. And basically everything that movies cut out of our ordinary lives in order to make them more exciting is not cut out, and we experience all of it. That is.
But then fascists come in and watch them do it.
Yeah, well, hang on. And that is what the Star Wars Holiday Special is. And it's Chewie's family doing chores, cooking, watching TV, making phone calls. And then you would think, like you said, Rob, that it would get more exciting when the stormtroopers show up to harass them. But then the stormtroopers just watch TV. And we watch it with them. It's like, what are we watching?
The fascists are going to break into your home and watch TV with
you. That's what they do. That's what happens.
It's kind of. I kind of want to make this like play, like, right, where you're having your normal day and then like these horrible fascists come into your home, but then all they do is just live your life with you.
You don't need to. It's already been done.
You keep having a perfectly normal day. You're a little tense, but then eventually you settle down. You keep expecting them to do something, but they never do.
Well, they are a little mean to Lumpy, at least.
Oh, they're total dicks to Lumpy.
They're very mean to Lumpy. It's so weird.
I emotionally bonded to Lumpy. If anything happens to Lumpy, I swear to God, I will kill everyone in the room.
And I thought Lumpy was a little shit. I was like, fuck this kid, dude. The whole time.
Can we just pause for a second that Chewbacca is the character template name, right, that we have? And when the CBS people are asked to name more Wookiees, they come up with Itchy and Lumpy. Like, what is happening there?
Lumpy
His name is Chewbacca.
Lumpy is short for Lumparuwu or something.
Yes, you're right, Mims. I think it's something like that. I don't know the exact name.
It's like Lumparoo. I read it in one of the expanded universe novels I read.
Itchy would be long for like Itchdondo or something like that. Itchabald.
Itchabald Crane.
Because Chewie has like a cutesy nickname too. Like his name is Chewbacca, but we call him Chewie.
I assumed Han Solo had given that to him though. Absent humans, I don't see the need, right, to come up with this humanization of their names.
No, I totally agree with that. But here we are.
Here we are. Anyway, sorry. Just had to mention that.
Well, Han did mention that he's never not gotten Chewie home for a life day. So maybe those nicknames also came from Han.
Wait, Han did give him the nickname.
He did?
Chewie? Thinking back to the Solo movie again.
Oh, yeah. But yeah.
So he just wanders around Wookiee Town nicknaming everybody.
More or less.
He's very popular in Endor. Just all the time.
I have to point out, too, that like Wookiees in the Star Wars lore live for like 1,000 years. And I feel like I've mentioned my friend Jordan a lot. He just knows, he's taught me so much about Star Wars because he knows like everything about it. But he says that because everybody feels like Chewbacca is sort of like Han Solo's dog. But with the fact that Chewbacca is going to live way longer than Han Solo, it's more like Han Solo is actually Chewbacca's dog. And so he's just the dude he hangs out with for a bit and then he'll go back home.
Yeah, like because he pledged a life debt. So, like, technically, after Han died, he could just fuck off back home.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's clear.
It's all good.
Man, if only, like, my creditors would die and then all my debts would get cleared, that'd be great. FAFSA, done.
If only they only lived for, like, 8.5 years.
I should just borrow money from dogs instead.
There you go.
Sad, okay.
No, it's great for the dogs to be rich.
From their standpoint.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
It's not my fault that they're, you know, dogs.
Yeah, I don't choose their lifespan.
Okay.
We're still on the first scenes of Anna. Proceed.
Even... Oh, my God. So, I think that the issue that happens here is because that the show is meant to be a variety show. So the family storyline is the framing device, but I don't think that the device works for a variety show, or maybe that this framing device was just exceptionally poorly written. The TV shows that they watch are the various variety acts. So I could maybe forgive the special if the acts were all entertaining, but most of them are also just so boring. The actor, and I will give the actors credits, I think the actors who are in the variety acts do a great job. Like, it seems like they're actually trying and stuff, but every scene just goes on for way, way too long, and none of the skits are that funny or interesting, and they would arguably be more interesting if you shortened them, because then you wouldn't get tired of the bit. It overstays its welcome. And
I did like the skits, and I am happy to hang with that opinion, but I agree that they all could run a little bit shorter. I think the Harvey Korman, like one of the first ones when he's playing the Julia Child character, is quite funny, but it's funny at the end.
Yes.
Like you could have cut half of the beginning.
Yes, exactly. You didn't need any of that beginning stuff.
Yeah.
And honestly, I felt every minute of this special. Towards the end, it felt like that the special was just never going to end. Like I had accidentally entered my own personal hell and I'd just be sitting there watching the Star Wars Holiday Special for all eternity. So mercifully, it did end. And now that I've given my general review, but I'll take you through what happens in the Star Wars Special, which is a lot and nothing at all. So the special opens on Han and Chewie being chased in the Falcon by some Star Destroyers, with Han promising Chewie that he'll get him back home in time for Life Day. Don't you worry. We are then taken to Chewie's home, where we see Lumpy playing with his toys and bothering his grandpa Itchy. His mom then asks him to take out the trash, and he doesn't, so he gets yelled at, and then he takes out the trash. And just a reminder, by the way, that Wookiees don't speak English, and so they're speaking in grunts and weird animal noises and are never subtitled. So for the first, like, 10 minutes, there is no speaking, and just mostly really annoying noises while actors are miming everything in these giant hairy costumes that were also apparently suffocating them.
It's like a scene from Full House, but you can't understand, like, everyone's just grunting at each other.
It really is. And Lumpy was definitely being a little shit. His mom had to ask him like 3 times to take out the trash. And I think Lumpy is a bad kid because Chewbacca's an absent father. So he's just not
there. Yeah, no, that checks out.
Yeah, he's too busy helping Han and with the rebellion to be a dad to Lumpy. So
he has a life debt. He needs an Uncle Jesse.
He does need an Uncle Jesse. I forgot about
Uncle Jesse and Uncle Joey would straighten out little Stephanie. It'd be fine.
But he does have an Uncle Jesse. In the shopkeeper.
Oh, that's true. Come on. Come on, Savannah. This is Lumpy's fault.
Yeah, Lumpy's just a shit to be a shit.
Lumpy's just a little shit.
Lumpy's just an asshole.
Yeah, he is.
But he's my asshole. I love him.
So after Lumpy is done taking out the trash, his mom, Mala, puts on a virtual circus show for him that he watches, so we watch that with him. After this, you can tell that they're getting more worried about Chewbacca because they go over to a framed picture frame of him and hold it and then, like, stroke it. Like, they're like, oh, where is he? Man, I'm so sad that he's not here yet. So they call Luke Skywalker to ask him if he's seen Chewie, but he doesn't understand them. So half the scene is Luke just being like, hey, what's up, guys? Where's Chewie and Han? Can you put Han on so I can actually understand what you guys are saying? And then he's like, they're like, oh, no, he's not here yet. And he's like, oh, God, something bad must have happened to them. But don't worry. It'll be fine. They'll get there soon. Bye. and then, like, whatever ship he's working on with R2-D2, like, kind of explodes. And he's like, I gotta go. I'll talk to you later. Then they call a shopkeep who apparently lives on Kashyyyk, which is something that's weird because it seems like in Star Wars lore now, Kashyyyk is, like, a strictly, like, Wookiee planet. Not that, like, other species don't live there, but, like, it's mainly just Wookiees that live there. But, yeah, so they call him for some reason. I guess because they ordered something from him and he was meant to deliver it. But before Mala gets to say anything, we have to watch a scene of an Imperial officer shopping. And one of my favorite parts of that scene was the guy, the shopkeep, is like, hey, you want to buy this like really cool fish tank? And the dude looks at it and goes, I hate fish. It was so weird. He had such a strange voice. I liked it though. But that's the whole scene. And then he steals
the like super like mustache
trimmer. Right, I forgot about that. Yeah,
no, the shopkeeper gives it to him, remember?
You can get stains out of your clothes.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a gift.
So and it'll tell you all the rules of the Empire. It'll quote them to you as you're, you know, doing your morning toilette.
Yep, all that happens. Very interesting stuff. I'm so happy I watched it. But he sort of becomes like a bridge for the audience to understand what the Wookiees are saying later. Art Carney, the shopkeep.
Yeah.
I thought he was just a one-time thing. And then he shows up again later. But so we then get a very, very small scene with Darth Vader saying that we must find the rebels and we should check every house on that planet in order to find them because they somehow know that the Falcon was heading to Kashyyyk, I guess. And then it's time for cooking. Yay. And we watch Mala cook and follow a cooking show. That is another variety sketch. And I, like you said, Rob, like I think the beginning of this sketch is so boring, but towards the end it gets so crazy and ridiculous. I really liked they start like singing a song, like they're like,
yes,
they're
yes.
like stirring
and
pushing, something
punching, do send this.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
they're
yeah.
stirring something and they're like stir whip stir 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 whip stir yeah, yeah, whip yeah. And then they're like, and then they grow another arm and then they're like stir whip 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 pound stir stomp pound. And I like that part was funny and I thought it was interesting relatively.
Yeah, we could have got in there sooner. I just assumed that she had all the arms and then they just came out. I think they were riding on the old, you know, 70s, pre-70s, Milton Berle trope. Ah, man in a dress. That's just hilarious. We don't need to have any jokes yet. But then as we got to the end, they actually put all their jokes out.
Yeah. Yeah, because there were no jokes at the beginning. I thought it was actually a woman. So I was just like, yeah. So when you told me that was a man, I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know that.
But if it was 1978, you would have recognized Harvey Korman because he was a big TV guy.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah, that'd be like seeing one of the cast of Friends doing this role.
I gotcha. So,
which one?
Well, which none of them, because they're not as talented as Harvey Korman, but...
Ooh. So,
maybe Lisa Kudrow. She's my favorite of that cast. She's a good actor.
We then cut back to Han and Chewie, who are still being chased by Star Destroyers. And then we hear the Empire And then we hear the Empire tell the planet of Kashyyyk through a broadcast that they have essentially blocked off the planet and no one will be allowed to leave it or land on it. Then the shopkeep shows up and brings Lumpy a toy, Mala another TV thing. And what he brings Itchy is probably the strangest part of the entire special. So he first brings him a proton pack to fix his broken VR headset type thing. But then he hands Itchy like this floppy drive looking thing and says, I know what you'd like. It's one of those, it's hard to explain. It's a wow, if you know what I mean. Happy Life Day. And I do mean Happy Life Day. He then puts the floppy disk into the headset for Itchy, and what turns on is porn, like phone sex porn. And now, I mean, no one is naked, but a fantasy woman appears and talks about having sex with this Wookiee. And there is no other interpretation that you can have for this scene.
When I watched this, my first question was, because how she pitches it is saying that, like, she exists because of that Itchy created her. So is Itchy, like, into interspecies business? Yeah. So,
Her name is Diane Carroll, by the way.
Who is very talented.
The actor's name.
She's very talented.
The actress Diane Carroll. And very beautiful.
Yeah.
I just don't think of her as a Wookiee's type.
No.
But we can't judge, all right? Like, we can't judge.
She doesn't look like her alien, really. She just kind of looks like a normal person with, like, funky hair, I think.
Yeah, she got a wig on, yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, this is actually, like, because I was so shocked by this scene, I feel like I have to say the lines for you to understand what they are. I might regret this, but I'm going to do it anyway, so. Like, I am here. My voice is for you alone. I exist for you. I am in your mind as you create me. Oh, yes, I can feel my creation. Oh, we're excited, aren't we? Just relax, yes? Now we can have a good time, can't we? I'll tell you a secret. I find you adorable. I am your fantasy, so experience me. I am your pleasure. Enjoy me. This is our moment together in time that we might turn this moment into an eternity. And that is actually how it is said and the actual words. I went back and I rewatched it multiple times and wrote down as much of it as I could.
Like, now we got to charge double for this episode.
I know. Like, maybe we'll just make that part of Patreon.
Triple if we can get Mims to do it too.
Yeah, there you go, Mims.
I think you're just reading into it a little too much, all right?
I said it exactly how she says it. I swear to God, on my life, that is exactly how she says it. And that is the only reason I'm doing this, for researcher's intent. So everyone who doesn't watch it understands that that is porn.
I don't know how I heard it. She sounded like, I'm here. My voice is for you alone.
But it's setting her up for a variety style musical number. The first one, I think, right, of the show. So that's also a bit of a surprise. It's a weird setup for a variety style musical
number.
Yeah,
because I think in my notes, I literally wrote, the porn is singing now. Why? I did. I was writing notes the entire time that I was doing this.
That's what Hugh Jackman's wife says as she goes to bed.
Okay. What?
Oh, Hugh.
A happy life day. Oh, yeah. I'm just looking through my notes real fast. I said, how is this real? The porn is singing. This actress is a beautiful singer, though, which is true. She is. Yes, she is a very
lovely,
good singer.
Lovely. The song itself, I thought, was pretty pleasant.
I'm sure Itchy thought the same thing.
But what the fuck? I just, like, Itchy did. I cannot wrap my mind around this decision. Who the fuck? Who said that this was okay?
CBS.
But, like, somebody at CBS had to write this, and then somebody had to greenlight it.
And somebody had to record it. And somebody who was a director was like, yes, make it sound like you're having sex with this Wookiee when you're saying your lines. Like, what the fuck?
First black woman to win a Tony for a musical theater performance.
This is crazy. So, but moving on. And also, actually, I do want to say that Itchy was just in the middle of the living room. So, like, yeah. I don't know, he was like masturbating in the middle of the living room or something. I don't know.
Hey, Lumpy had gone upstairs.
He did. Yeah, Lumpy got sent to his room for something, I guess. Or probably to put his toy up there, I think, was what it was. But then, so Mala, Chewie's wife, calls Princess Leia, who seems to have, like, a super serious attitude problem this entire scene. Like, she is so rude to Mala and C-3PO. Because C-3PO is just like, oh, Princess Leia, you have a phone call. And she's like, shut the fuck up, 3PO.
And but then, to be fair, everybody's like that to C-3PO. Like, okay, consistently.
You're right, but, like, I don't... But all he was doing was his job. Like, normally when they're telling him to shut up, it's because he's, like, freaking out about something. That he's just literally like, Leia, there's a phone call. And she's like, shut it, shut it. And then he's like, she can't understand what the Wookiees are saying. So he starts translating for her because that's his job as a protocol droid. And she's like, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk through you, C-3PO. So, and she goes to Mala and she's like, can you just put Han Solo on? And they're like, he's not here. And she's like, oh, okay, bye. That's like her.
Yeah, she's like,
scene.
I don't want to keep the lines tied up.
Yeah, exactly. That's. I was like, what the fuck is her problem? She's being so mean. So then we see Han and Chewie, and they finally made it to Kashyyyk, but the Empire's presence is everywhere, so they can't just land at his home. They have to land on the empty side of the planet and walk over, is what Han Solo says, on a whole ass planet. But anyway,
it's a small planet.
It's roughly the size of New Jersey.
We cut back to the family, and there's a knock at the door, and they get excited, expecting it to be Chewie. But then why the fuck would he be knocking at the door? It's his house. But then it's stormtroopers. Oh, no. They enter the home, and they say that we're going to search for any rebel activity. And then an officer walks in and slowly walks around the room. And this scene is really strange. And so this is how I interpret what happens. So the guy walks around the room. We don't get to see what he looks at, but he looks at something in disgust and then turns back to the Wookiees. I think what he saw was the porn VR headset chair, and he saw it covered in jizz and was like, ew.
I wasn't ready for
that. That has to be what he saw. Because the VR headset chair is just in the middle of the living room, and that's the only place he walked. It has to be what he saw.
Savannah, you have to phrase it differently, because saying it like that makes it sound like it was covered in music.
Okay.
Like cantina music.
Oh, yeah, that's true. The jazz in Star Wars, the genre is called jizz.
I had no idea. Are you for real?
Yeah, dead ass. The cantina band is a jizz band. Like, in actual Star Wars lore.
And they look like sperm.
They do, though!
So, anyway, the troopers search the house, or the living room, but they don't find any rebel stuff. But they still find this family suspicious, so they stick around. They turn on the TV gift that the shopkeep brought Mala, and it plays Jefferson Starship for the Stormtroopers.
Also not jizz music.
No,
that's rock. That's rock right there.
And jizz music of a different variety. Rocking.
Fun fact, the clip marked Marty Balin's final performance with Jefferson Starship, as he had left the band in October 1978, a month before the special was broadcasted.
Yes. Can I nerd out on this now?
Here's your moment, Rob.
So it is. This is a weirdly fascinating moment, not only in Jefferson Starship, Jefferson Airplane history. So, and I think it speaks to the weirdness of the whole episode in many ways, and like the mystery underlying this episode, which I think is very disappointing, but nevertheless weird and mysterious. So, like, brief history of Starship. Jefferson Starship. Jefferson Airplane was this huge, big deal band in the mid-60s. They were, you know, cutting-edge, psychedelic, folksy rockers, and they were formed by these two guys, Marty Balin and Paul Kantner. And a year into the band, they lost their female singer, and Grace Slick joined, and the three of them, along with Kokkonen and Cassidy, this is the Jefferson Airplane. And these guys are like the along with Grateful Dead and Quicksilver Messenger Service, these guys are like the San Francisco sound. Huge, huge band. And then they break apart. And in 1970, this is what, I think Mims brought this up when I did the Starship episode, but in 1970, Paul Kantner records an album solo called Blows Against the Empire. Star Wars doesn't exist yet.
Oh.
But he has recorded an album that is sci-fi in character. It is nominated for a Hugo Award, this album, and it's based on Robert Heinlein's novel called Methuselah's Children, this concept album. So it, I should say it's a concept album about a bunch of counterculture guys, a bunch of hippies who hijack a starship. I love this album. It's got like Music Concrete in it, and the song about hijacking the starship is awesome. It's just, it's a really cool, weird album. Super idiosyncratic. Paul Kantner was obsessed with sci-fi and obsessed with space his whole life, and he worked it into his music from day one. So Paul Kantner is the perfect guy. If you're going to have a guy write you a song for your Star Wars special, it's Paul Kantner.
That is really interesting.
Right? And the Empire, right? Blows against the Empire.
Yeah. Was he super into Star Wars? It feels like it would be right up his alley.
Well, here's where it gets even weirder. Paul Kantner didn't write Light the Sky on Fire, which is the song that Dark Jefferson Starship plays. His teenage guitar phenom, Craig Chakiso, is the guy who wrote Light the Sky on Fire. And I think this is part of just like the progression of the band. They did four albums as Jefferson Starship. So that album, Blows Against the Empire, was credited to Paul Kantner and Jefferson Starship, although the members of that outfit were like, seriously, it was Jerry Garcia and David Freiberg, who would be in Jefferson Starship, but David Crosby, they were a bunch of like hippies, like counterculture, hippie, psychedelic guys who were doing this album with him. They weren't Jefferson Starship, a completely new band then formed, and he kept the name Jefferson Starship. So Blows Against the Empire is considered a solo album.
Oh.
Balin wasn't really involved, yeah. And then they record Dragonfly, and Marty Balin gets back involved, and Dragonfly involves some of Kantner's like spacey weird stuff. My favorite song on that album is Hyperdrive, which is a great slick song. However, it's all about space and all about, you know, weird trippy space metaphors and stuff. The argument is, as far as I understand it, that the CBS people or someone was aware that there was a band called Jefferson Starship and that they had written a song called Hyperdrive. And that was all they needed to invite them to be on the Star Wars holiday special. But I think it's a little deeper than that, insofar as Blows Against the Empire sounds like a concept album about Star Wars.
It does. It does.
But purely by accident. And what happens over the next, you know, several years is they release four albums that sort of like each encapsulate a different element. Dragonfly is Air, then they have Spitfire, Red Octopus is their big one, and Marty Balin is this huge, he does all the love songs, and he becomes this huge celebrity through these albums. Grace Slick, in the meantime, who was a big deal on the Airplane and wrote some of their number one hits, like Somebody to Love, well, not number one, but top hits, top 10 hits, Somebody to Love, White Rabbit, she's suffering from alcoholism, and ultimately she leaves the band. She leaves the band in 1978. Marty Balin leaves the band in 1978. This is the only song that doesn't feature both of them, as far as I understand it. It is also the only Jefferson Starship song that is not on any Jefferson Starship main albums. This song was released as a single, and it was released on a compilation album. Otherwise, it doesn't appear on any of their albums at all. The other interesting thing about this song is that the last album they did with Marty Balin, who, by the way, just wandered off. He promised to do four albums with them. He did. He became wildly wealthy and just left. He just walked away from the whole thing. But Earth was their final album. It pictured an image of Earth, and the font for the album, Jefferson Starship Earth, is exactly the Star Wars font.
Okay.
I'm looking that up right now.
Look up the album cover. It's a picture of the Earth, and you can see the background of space, and you can see the Star Wars font. And it also is like, it's created in such a way that it looks like it's scrolling across it, the way the Star Wars text does. RCA put $500,000 into promoting the album. RCA never put that much money into promoting an album, and I think that really how they ended up on this special is a combination of RCA trying to promote the album and CBS trying to like tap into this, you know, space themed band in a lazy fashion. And this creates this perfect synergy. It's also true that Marty Balin hated going on tour. I think that may be ultimately why he just walked off. So TV promotion is a great way to sell records when your lead singer won't go on tour.
But then this is the special they ended up in, the one that was only broadcasted once.
Yeah, they got screwed there. RCA really got it, took it up the butt there. The song, though, did okay as a single. It made it up to number 66 in the U.S., 73 in Canada. The last weird thing I have to say about this is there's a Marty Balin speaks a line. So Marty Balin sings it. Craig Chakiso, the teenage guitar god, writes this song. And Paul Kantner has nothing to do. Paul Kantner's in the song, and that's it. So the space guy is not involved at all in the writing of the song, which is so weird.
That is weird. Was he in the video? Like in the the special?
Yeah.
It was hard to see. The special was, that part of it was really blurry because it was like really weirdly lit with these bright pink lights and stuff. So
Kantner's like a distinctive guy to me because he always looks like his Jefferson Airplane self, no matter, like, as he progresses into the 70s and everyone gets more and more like the hair bands of the 80s, Kantner still has this big, you know, his round glasses and his long hair. He still looks like a hippie, just like LARPing as a, you know, arena rocker. So you can see him in the, and he's playing the guitar, but he's not featured. Chakiso, of course, is featured because he wrote the song, and he wrote the song in part to have his big guitar licks. And Marty Balin is featured as the lead singer. But the song has this weird line that he speaks on the pyramids. On the pyramids of the legend, the great god Kopa Khan came from the stars and vanished. And the legend says he will come back again someday. This is not sung. This is spoken in the middle of the song. Who the hell is Kopa Khan? Oh. That's not a real guy.
I have no idea. Is that a Star Wars thing?
In fact, it becomes a Star Wars thing. Here's the weird thing. Craig Chakiso, the lyrics to this song appear nowhere. There are no lyrics in the liner notes to Gold. And like I said, this song doesn't appear on any actual Jefferson Starship non-compilation album. So it is a fan who creates a transcript of this special who says that what Marty Balin is saying is Kopa Khan.
Okay.
And this gets incorporated into Star Wars lore ever afterwards. I think it may be Kublai Khan. It's possible because Kantner and Slick were obsessed with China. Slick's gone and Chakiso is writing the music, but Kantner's right there. But Kublai Khan was a Chinese emperor. He was not a god. So maybe it's a reference to a Mayan god. Who knows? In any case, it's a made-up name that then gets looped into Star Wars lore and comic books ever after this song.
Do you have an example? I've never heard of that name before.
Kopa Khan? It's not in the shows proper. It's in, like, the novelizations, or the movies, I should say. Yeah, it becomes... It's worked into the novelizations.
I'm trying to look in... on Wikipedia this shit.
Yeah, you can find Kopa Khan on Wikipedia.
Well...
But this is Jefferson Starship contributing lore to Star Wars land.
Look at that. Everything's connected here on Strange Ride.
Isn't it more interesting, right? It's more interesting than it is. When you watch it, you're like, that's, what the hell? Why did they put pink all over him? And then the song is over. But it's actually a very interesting moment in Intersection.
Yeah, no, it really is. So now I'll continue with something that isn't very interesting, I guess. But...
we'll see about that.
Yeah, that's true. So after Jefferson Starship's performance, Lumpy starts acting up again because he's mad that the stormtroopers are there. So they give him the Star Wars equivalent of an iPad, and they let him watch cartoons. and so the cartoons are about the main characters of Star Wars, which that doesn't make any sense, but whatever. so this is where Boba Fett is introduced. And it's a really interesting animated sequence. I think the animation is good, but it's strange because they just make the, like, Luke and Leia and Han look so strange.
They're very characteristic. They look like caricatures of themselves.
Yes, they do.
It's like Strange Planet a little bit. I think it has that weird, like, avant-garde animation style.
And the eyes are terrifying.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But it's an interesting, and it's a very interesting little short. Like, I enjoyed it. I thought it was neat. And honestly, it made me think Boba Fett was an interesting character, which Empire, he has more character in that animated short than he does in Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. So, I was like, oh, this is a cool introduction. And he kept calling them friend. And I was like, that would work on me. I trust that guy. The way he called them friend, I was like, I like that.
I trust any person whose face I can't see that calls me a friend.
Sure.
So then the stormtroopers are ordered to search Lumpy's room, but they don't. All they do when they go into the room is just absolutely trash it. Like, they throw his toys everywhere, and he has this big Bantha plushie, and they take it and they rip its head off. It's like, and I know that they're evil and Star Wars isn't subtle about anything, but this is just like so over the top cartoonishly evil that it's just like unbelievable. And so then the Imperial officer then tells Lumpy, he's like, go clean your room. And Lumpy runs off, and then he smiles at Mala and he's like, that should keep him busy for a while. As if he like did her a favor by trashing and breaking the kids' toys and room.
It'll take him days to glue the head back on that thing.
So then we watch Lumpy clean his fucking room and then get bored by doing that. So he so he gets bored cleaning his own room and he decides.
But he weirdly tucks the thing in. Can I just say?
Oh, yeah, was weird.
Yeah, that's the sad moment where he's like, he sees it, grapples with it being maimed, puts it up, puts a blanket over it.
Gives it a little kiss. Then he moves on, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would be too if I came into my room and the fascists had destroyed my stuffed animals. I would have been like, what the fuck? It isn't enough to have fascists in my room anyway, and they destroyed my plushie? Like, it's so weird.
That's how you know that the Empire is evil. They break into a child's room. They break the they just tear the head off of that Bantha.
And it's not like they look inside of it to see if he was hiding bad things inside of it. They just rip the head off of it. That's all they do. And then throw his shit everywhere. But yeah, so he does do that. And after he does that, he then decides to open the toy that the shopkeep brought him, which is like this radio transmitter thing. And it comes with the video instructions. It's video instructions of how to put it together. And this is the scene that I thought that I was put into my own personal hell. Because I just genuinely felt like it was never going to end. It's literally just an instructional video for the most part. But then every now and then the character giving the instructional video will glitch out and stuff because he's a robot. And
there's Harvey Korman all over again. But yes, the bit, they kind of explain it at the beginning, but it's so convoluted that he, for no reason, is just slows down.
Yeah, well, because they're they said something like, every machine that us type of people make is perfect, so this machine is perfect, and then it wasn't perfect, and it started breaking, right? Because I refused to watch it again. I was like, this part,
they
fuck this
They
part.
Said something about the thing will run out of energy, but don't worry, it'll pick up again, and that's what kept happening.
That's where I was so tired, and I was just like, I hate this. Why is this happening to me?
It was a really convoluted premise for a bit.
And it was so long. It went on for over 5 minutes. It felt like it was terrible. Oh, I hated it. I hated that part. That was definitely my least favorite part. I liked the porn more than I liked this part of it. And it's just so boring. So he's upstairs doing that, putting his radio together, and the stormtroopers, although they haven't found anything, are still there, and that was pissing me off too. I was just leave. Why won't they leave? I hate this. And so then a live broadcast pops up on the TV that says that they, oh my God. So a live broadcast. So they're basically watching TV with the family. And then a live broadcast pops up saying, this is a live stream from Tatooine, which is the planet that Luke is from, the sand planet. So you can finally, what the voice says is so you can see how shitty life is there and how you should be grateful that you don't live on Tatooine, which was definitely sponsored directly by Anakin or Darth Vader, however you want to call it. Because Darth Vader also grew up on Tatooine. And so I'd like to imagine it's my headcanon that Darth Vader was like, I'm so sick and tired of all these people complaining about my fascist dictatorship. I'm going to show them how shitty their life could be.
At least you aren't a slave to fucking Watto.
No, and living in the sand planet. But then it shows people just hanging out and having fun in a bar.
Yeah, no, like it made Tatooine look like not so bad.
It really did.
The worst part of it was that they made you go home because the Empire got there.
What? So this is the scene with Bea Arthur, and she is a barkeep at this bar, and this fucking creepy guy with a head that is shaped like a volcano starts flirting with her, and he won't take no
Harvey
for
Korman
an answer.
Again.
That was Harvey Korman again. I hated this dude. Every line that he said, I was like, fuck this guy. He's a creep. I want him gone. I want him dead.
I kind of liked the twist, though. It wasn't a twist, but like I thought it was rewarding when it turns out that it's what she says to all the customers, and he realizes that she says it to all the customers.
I did too, except for the fact that he still didn't give up after that, though.
Right.
That's where I was like, what the fuck? Because, he was like, you said these six words to me, and that's what made me realize that you loved me and I loved you. And then she says it to another person, and then he gets all sad about it. But I call him Volcano Head because his head goes up like a volcano. There's a hole in the top of his head, and that's how he drinks. And it's gross. I hate it.
Even though he has a mouth.
And he has a mouth. He looks like a normal guy, except for the fact that he has a hole in the top of his head. And he drinks out of it. And Bea Arthur, like, pours a pitcher of, like, I guess whatever liquor it's meant to be into his head. It's so weird. I hate it.
Yeah, the drinks also just sit in pitchers behind the bar.
Yes. So, I do think that this was my favorite part of the special. It was definitely the most interesting. And I don't hate it for it being uninteresting. And I don't actually hate it. I just think the guy is really creepy, but I think it's an interesting thing that happens. But I do think he's creepy. And then the fact that he never accepts the answer no, and I'm just like, back off, man, leave her alone. Scram! Then, as so they're at the bar, and then another Imperial announcement happens at the TV bar, and it says that there's now a curfew on Tatooine, and everyone must go home. But why? Okay, whatever. So B tries to close up shop, but nobody will go home. Like, they all just basically tell her to fuck off, so she's like, okay, well, I'll buy everybody a drink, and then you'll go home, and that works for whatever reason. And so then...
Because she cha-chas them out.
Yeah, she does. She pours them all another drink, and then she sings them a song, which I actually like the song.
The song was really cool because it like incorporated Cantina Band into it.
Yeah
and their iconic song.
Mm-hmm.
Good use of jizz.
great jizz, everybody.
Oh, no
best jizz I ever done did hurt.
Now you want to go back and talk about Starship some more, don't you?
But yeah, so she she sings the song. It says good night, but not goodbye. And then she gets everyone to leave. But then she goes back to the bar. And then you find out that the fucking creepy guy stayed behind and then gives her a flower. And then she takes it as if it's like saying like, oh, yeah, she's going to end up with the creepy guy. No, fuck that noise. Get the creepy guy out of there, too. But anyway. Okay, so then the troopers get an alert telling them to report back to base. So they're finally leaving, except they tell one trooper to stay behind. Because they know that there's supposed to be another person living in the house, according to the records, so they want the trooper to stay until he gets home. So the trooper then discovers that Lumpy is the one that gave the order to the troopers to leave with his new radio toy thing, and the trooper goes to kill Lumpy. But he runs outside, where he runs into Han Solo and Chewie, who they throw the stormtrooper off the cliff. The cliff being, they live in a treehouse, so, like, they're way up high in a tree. So, like, going outside is, like, a balcony, so they throw them off the balcony of the tree. That's why. Not really a cliff, but whatever.
And we get the Wilhelm scream.
We do get the Wilhelm scream.
Oh, yes! I wrote that in my notes. I wanted to say that. I love that. The Wilhelm scream happens. Han says hi to everybody, and then bye, because he's got to go back to the Falcon. Okay, and so now I have to bring this up. And I don't know if this is something that you guys noticed or if anyone noticed this, but I noticed it. So throughout this special, I feel like every scene. So let me say this first. As someone who is a really, really big fan of Star Wars, I have never shipped Chewbacca and Han Solo. Shipping, in case you don't know, somehow is when you want two characters to be in a relationship together. I feel like a lot of people do ship Han Solo and Chewbacca. I do not. I always just saw them as very good buddies. However, after watching this holiday special, I feel like they were really gay with each other this entire special. And It was like they like there was long like loving glares that they would stare at each other with, like when they were doing their scenes on the Falcon, and
it's the holiday season, Savannah.
I know, but the way that
time to get closer to the ones you love.
We already know that Chewie's dad is into interspecies stuff. Why isn't Chewie?
I don't have a problem with it. I just think it's interesting that I've never really picked up on it in anything else except for this. And then I think my argument is correct, because there is absolutely no platonic reason that this part happens. And I will tell you what happens now. So Han, like, says goodbye to the family. He says hi and he says goodbye. And as he's leaving, Han and Chewie embrace one another. And, like, it is a really long, big embrace. Like, Han Solo, like, buries his face in Chewbacca's chest. And then, like, they let go. And Chewbacca is still holding on to, like, Han Solo's, like, hips. And then Han Solo
The same way that, like, I'll hug Faith.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, like, romantic and passionate. But then listen to this part. This is the part. So he then, Han Solo, like, they're, like, looking at each other. And then Han Solo takes his arm and grabs Chewbacca's throat and holds it for a second. Like, he's like, I swear to God, this actually happens. I've watched it like 10 times. He grabs his throat in almost like a daddy dom type thing. Like, it, like, I swear to God, that is what it looks like. And there is no platonic reason that this happens. There is no platonic reason that this happens. And after he does that, and it's not like he like pats his face or anything. He grabs his throat and holds and like squeezes for a moment. And then he lets go. And then Han Solo leaves. What the fuck?
It's like he went for the shoulder.
Yeah, it's like
real bad.
No,
who hasn't done that to their bro from time to time?
That is That is not what happened. That is not what happened. He went for the throat. Why? Why did he do that? Harrison Ford, tell us right now, what were you thinking, please? That happens, and you go watch that one part right now. That happens.
It's minute marker. It's like 1:15 at this point, right?
Yeah, I think so, actually. Because we're getting relatively close to the end. You'd think it would be over soon, but it's still got fucking like 20 minutes left to go. God damn it.
In a fair world, we'd be almost done.
So Chewie hugs his family and sort of kisses his wife for a little too long. And then they all grab these weird crystal ball / orb things and then are teleported into like space, where they, like, are wearing these red robes, and then there's all these other Wookiees around, and then they walk into this, like, beam of light, this ball of light, and then they're teleported to this giant tree, which is called the Tree of Life. And all these other Wookiees are there, and they're all wearing robes, and also holding orbs. And Han and Luke and Leia and 3PO and R2-D2 are all there, too, for whatever reason. And Leia sings a song about Life Day. And then there is a flashback sequence that goes through the entire plot of A New Hope. Like, that, it just, it shows you, like, almost every major plot point that happens in A New Hope. Why? Why? And then the shot of Chewie that they use for that moment is weird, because it, like, makes him look like he's missing an eye. Like, it's, like, all black and stuff. It was just, like, I guess poorly lit and stuff. And then also, I just have to say this one part is, like, C-3PO says something like, oh man, I wish we were more than mechanical beings so that we could feel this like love and friendship that you guys feel, or something like that. But he says, he said specifically, at times like this, I really wish R2 and I were more. And I thought he was going to say more than friends. I just was like,
we already never shipped Han and Chewie, but always, 100% all the time, R2 and 3PO.
Yes.
Like, they are totally
an old
totally,
married couple.
Yeah, no, like it's got to be canon.
Oh yeah, for sure. So then you would think that this is where it ends, but we aren't that lucky yet. So we get to watch Chewie and his family back home eating dinner and praying over their food, and then finally, mercifully, it is over. I would like to take a moment and talk about the influence that the holiday special has had on even modern day Star Wars. So that was the first time that we heard anything about like a Wookiee's lifestyle and stuff. And then this is also the first time that the planet Kashyyyk is mentioned. And we won't actually see Kashyyyk again until episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. despite Lucas wanting the special destroyed, there are parts of it that are still canon. Life Day has actually since been adopted into the canon and is celebrated by Star Wars fans, especially on November 17th, the day that the special aired. So the idea is that it is still like a Wookiee holiday in particular, but after the Empire was beaten, people saw it as like, because Life Day is meant to be about like friendship and peace and whatnot, so like it was sort of like the whole galaxy sort of adopted it or whatever, so that's like the actual canon lore behind it.
How does it happen on the day? Because our calendar is based on our solar system and, you know.
Oh, well, no, so I don't think it has a specific, I'm sure it does have a specific day. I don't know what the dates, like the months and stuff like that are in Star Wars. Star Wars fans celebrate Life Day on November 17th is what I meant to say.
Okay, that makes sense.
But then also, so Lego actually released their own version of a Star Wars holiday special. And I just rewatched that one last night to see if there were references to it.
I watched both this special and the Lego special as like a double feature. / palate cleanser.
The Lego special is actually really cute. It's really good. I liked it a lot.
They got Billy Dee Williams back, and that anytime they bring back Billy Dee,
Did you enjoy it, Mims? I really liked it.
I thought it was really cute.
Yeah.
But it's completely unrelated to the original.
It is. So it's like Rey, like the newer Star Wars characters are all, they're getting ready to celebrate Life Day with Chewie and his family. So the only reference to the actual holiday special itself is one, that they're celebrating Life Day, and two, Itchy, Mala, and Lumpy do appear in it, but that they aren't like the main characters. They're kind of just like background characters. But
so Betty White isn't running a bar. There's none of that going on.
No, Rey tries. She's like upset that she's not a very good teacher or something. So then she accidentally finds this artifact that lets her travel through time, and she gets to meet all these like famous Star Wars people, and like she fights Darth Vader and stuff. Like I'm making it sound kind of dumber than it is, but it's fun. It's a cute little thing, and then you learn that like the true meaning of like this holiday is getting to be with the people you love and your friends and blah blah blah. It's cute. It's a good little Star Wars. If you want an actual Star Wars Christmassy type thing, go watch the Lego Holiday Special. Because it's actually more Christmassy than the holiday special itself. I feel like nothing really that happens in the actual holiday special, like the first one, is very Christmassy.
I'm adding light the sky on fire to my holiday rotation.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. I think it should be played by all radio stations at Christmas time.
Absolutely.
Mariah Carey, fucking Bing Crosby, and Craig Chiquiso.
Oh, boy.
But what I find also really interesting is that like it's still acknowledged by Star Wars, even though the special is like hated by Star Wars. Like Lucas could have changed the planet name of Kashyyyk, but he decided to keep it. They could have like erased Life Day, but they still like acknowledge that it's a thing. And then Disney obviously saw a marketing opportunity with it and has made a bunch of merch based off of the special, but they won't release the special, but they have a bunch of merch based off of it. Like in Galaxy's Edge, which is the Star Wars theme park, you could buy a mug that was shaped like the weird orbs, or you could buy a light up replica of the weird orb. You could also buy a plushie of Chewbacca in his red robe holding an orb. They really like the orbs. And then you could buy ornaments that say Life Day on them and stuff. And I think at one point you were even able to celebrate Life Day on Batuu, which is like the planet that Galaxy's Edge is set on or whatever. And then it's even being referenced in like the newest Star Wars show, The Skeleton Crew. I literally just watched all of it today and I really, really like it. But
it's
the
so
circus
good.
Act that is in the Star Wars Holiday Special, the kids in the background of one of these scenes are watching that same circus act on their like little TV thing. So I just think it's interesting that like, I mean, maybe they've accepted the fact that it's just never going away. So they're not necessarily trying to hide it anymore. And then also Disney will never miss an opportunity to merchandise something. So, but yeah.
The whole holiday special, I think, was intended as a merchandising opportunity, not only from the standpoint of George Lucas, but also Jefferson Starship and CBS.
Yeah. You're right. I just think it's interesting because it seems at one point they really were like trying to make people forget about it. But now I guess because it's become this sort of cult classic, they're kind of like, yeah, it's a thing. Sure. And Disney's like, buy merch. But yeah, that's the Star Wars Holiday Special. I don't know if I have anything else that I can say about it, honestly. But
but Mims, I'm told, has an opinion about what the actual Star Wars Holiday Special
is. So.
Yes, so... I'm assuming we'll just throw this at the end of the episode.
Yeah, this is the end of the episode.
I think this is a fine segue. Yeah. This is the time.
So, does anybody have any other final thoughts to say about the Star Wars Holiday Special?
One out of ten.
Oh, yeah. Do not recommend.
I think it's something that if you are a major fan of Star Wars, I think you have to watch it. I do.
Yeah, like,
but
watch it at least once if you're like a huge into Star Wars. Don't expect something good.
It's bad. It's very bad.
It's awful, but it's a rite of passage.
I agree with that.
A pop culture person, I mean, I'm not really a huge Star Wars fan. I like them fine, but I think a pop culture person should also see it. I think it's an important part of underground pop culture.
It's important to pop culture like as a whole.
And if you really want to find something good Star Wars, try and find one of the despecialized versions, like one of the original edits from 77 before Lucas went back and, you know, because he re-edits them every couple of years.
Or check out The Skeleton Crew. Is pretty cute. I really
liked
it so far.
Skeleton Crew was wonderful.
It's only got 4 episodes out as of this recording, and I'm excited to watch more of it.
I would die for Neil.
If I could have the soundtrack, they would definitely be part of my Christmas rotation. Because we can have this starship. Like, you can listen to Light the Sky on Fire. It's on gold. But Bea Arthur, like, I'd listen to that again.
I would too.
I would listen to Diane Carroll again.
I did think about going back and, like, re-listening to that part so I could learn the words, so I could just, like, pull that out at, like, parties or whatever to be like, look how indie of a Star Wars fan I am. I know the words to this song. And also, like, she's an alto. She has a beautiful voice. So I was like, I could do that.
She does, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but yeah, so Mims and I have had this we've been waiting to have this argument for an entire year, actually, because we wanted to do this last year and then we just never did.
So picture this: a young, career-driven woman whisked off her feet by a roguish man, one far less uptight and proper than she's used to in her upbringing. They butt heads, but slowly their true feelings show. It sounds like the plot of a Hallmark original Christmas movie.
Oh, my God.
But what if I say that is the romance subplot of The Empire Strikes Back? Now, myself and the beautiful woman I share an apartment with, were about to watch the Tim Allen Christmas classic, The Santa Claus, last year. But said beautiful woman's ADHD flared up, and I said, just passingly, well, I'm going to watch my favorite Christmas movie, Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. To which she's just, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm just like, well, I watched A New Hope again a couple weeks ago. I want to watch The Empire Strikes Back. And she's just like, well, it's not a Christmas movie. And I'm just like, but it can be. And so I started, like, texting a bunch of my friends, like, hey, could you be convinced that The Empire Strikes Back is a Christmas movie? And two of the friends that I texted were Savannah and Luke.
What did they say, man?
Fuck no. In no uncertain terms. But I'm
going to be open to it then.
Thank you.
All right.
So, before I start, I want to say that one could argue that Lord of the Rings, specifically Fellowship of the Ring, is also a Christmas film because there is an old man, an old magic old man with a long beard. There's elves gifts.
Yeah.
There's snow. And the Balrog is basically Krampus.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Or the Heat Miser.
Oh, I like that. I like that. But anyway. Back to The Empire Strikes Back. So first off, Hoth. That's the fucking North Pole, and you can't convince me otherwise. There's even the abominable snowman.
Mm-hmm. This is compelling from the start.
Exactly. And then an old bearded man gives sagely advice. And what is sagely advice if not a gift? So the ghost of Obi-Wan Kenobi is indeed Santa Claus. Speaking
That's
of gifts.
I've always thought of old Ben.
Speaking of gifts, Han opens a tauntaun, which is basically a smelly living present. The present being Luke Skywalker not freezing to death.
It's not living at when he does that, though.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I typed this in my notes as awkward family moment, which happens every Christmas. Usually not Luke getting a smooch from his sister after getting out of a weird healing bath. Yoda is just like a strange, tiny old man.
Like a wise elf.
Yeah, exactly. He is an elf. He is a magical creature. He might be goblinish, but nah. He's got pointy ears, and he's small. He's a Santa elf. Don't question me on that. And he sees a young man struggling on his planet. He takes him in. He feeds him a weird stew. And, you know, that's in the Christmas spirit.
It's very festive, yes.
Yeah, that stew, that could be figgy pudding.
Right, makes him do some calisthenics in a swamp.
Exactly.
Yes, I do that every Christmas.
Now, we all know the economy is rough right now, right? But Darth Vader, the generous gentleman he is, he gives a bunch of bounty hunters jobs. What a nice guy.
I thought he was going to be Scrooge. I thought you were going to make him Scrooge.
No. Like, Vader is in the holiday spirit.
Okay, all right.
No.
Got it.
The vision in the cave, something that I personally experience whenever I drink too much eggnog. So I'm also putting this as my argument.
You experience yourself as Darth Vader, or you experience yourself as, like, your father?
No, I have a physical altercation with myself.
Okay.
Lando. That guy just screams holiday cheer. Like, you know, the parties, the Christmas parties at Cloud City have got to be off the fucking charts, man.
He's got to have a sick, like, Christmas cape that he wears.
Yeah, exactly.
Every
like,
year.
He's got to have, like, a Santa cape.
Life Day cape.
Yep.
And the soundtrack.
Yep,
I mean, that's already been determined.
He's got an orb.
Right?
He's got an orb.
He's got an orb. You can hear B. Arthur coming out of the stereo system. It's a good day in Cloud City.
Yeah, exactly. The Ugnaughts are also Santa's elves. I'm just saying that. Because I see the confusion on Rob's face specifically. The Ugnaughts are the little guys who work in Cloud City. That, like, attack and break apart C-3PO.
Right. Yeah.
I was about to say that, too. I was like, Rob definitely has no idea what an Ugnaught is.
No, I didn't know they had a name.
Everything
has a name
in Star
Wars. Right, yeah. They're like Oompa Loompas.
No. Think more like the tech scavengedness of a Jawa.
Gremlins.
Oh, no.
Darth Vader prepares Han, Leia, Chewie, and 3PO a lovely dinner. I mean, he would be honored if they would join them. Such a nice guy. Now, Han getting tortured was really fucked up, and I can't really spin that. I tried. I really did.
He was naughty.
There you go. He was on the naughty list.
He was too handsy with Chewbacca.
I was just about to say. I was going to say that. Oh, my God.
He kept grabbing him by the throat.
We thought Chewie would be on the naughty list.
No. He didn't bite his hand off.
No. We can't use that as the argument, because Vader does a lot of throat playing with people.
That is true. Is that the next argument, that Darth Vader's a daddy dom?
That argument.
I was about to say, tell me he's not, but...
Oh, Chewie putting C-3PO back together. I mean, come on, you do things for your loved ones, especially around Christmas. It's got to be like the equivalent to like rigging up the lights or like putting up the tree.
I assemble a lot of children's toys at the
holiday just like
season.
Putting shit together is part of the holidays.
I have to assemble a small kitchen tonight and wrap it up for and hide it for tomorrow to go out.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Leia professes her love to Han. What is the holidays about if not for love?
Is there any kind of like greenery above them at that moment?
No, they're in the most metal place that you can imagine.
Yeah, no, like they're like,
you know, because he's about to get frozen in carbonite. It's that she goes, "I love you," and he says, "I know."
Yeah,
I know.
Well, he's becoming a gift for the future.
Exactly. That was my
he's
next.
Getting
note.
Wrapped up. Oh,
and then he's hung up like an ornament.
Yeah. Han getting frozen was sad, of course, but he was given as a gift to Boba Fett, who, like a jerk, re-gifts him to Jabba the Hutt.
That's good.
Vader renegotiates his deal with Lando, and that's just capitalism for you. This holiday thrives on that shit. Vader tries to wrap Luke as a present and give him to his boss, which is a little weird, but who am I to judge? Speaking of Vader and Luke, not only does it show a heartwarming family reunion, but also sometimes families fight. It doesn't mean they don't love each other. I mean, Vader totally could have killed the shit out of Luke easily. And Luke ends the movie with a brand new gift of a hand to replace the one old Pops lopped off.
When they got drunk after dinner.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who hasn't fought their father during Christmas? And also, before he got frozen, Han was nice enough to gift Lando the same outfit that he wore in A New Hope.
Because he wears it the next movie, right?
It was pointed
that's what you're talking about.
It was pointed out by Family Guy that in, like, the last scene of Empire Strikes Back, Lando is wearing Han's clothes.
Yes. Man, Lando is a weird guy.
Lando is the fucking best.
Is that your argument?
That's my argument.
See, I've made a counter argument. I've been working on it as well.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Are you ready?
Yes.
the Empire Strikes Back is not a Christmas movie because it's not.
That's a horrible argument.
I yield my time.
Yield the balance of your time. All
right, Rob, we need to adjudicate.
Oh, neither of them brought up Marty Balin or Jefferson Starship, so I've got to say I'm a little torn.
Now, I think the nature of Mims's argument is more compelling than Savannah's.
It's certainly more detailed.
Yes, absolutely.
But methinks the lady doth protest too much.
Excuse me?
I'm referring to Mims.
Oh, I was like, wait, what? I felt like I protested just enough.
Oh.
I will say, Mims, I do really like the argument of Princess Leia being a city girl who falls for some country guy.
Thank you. That was like the first argument that I could think of. I've been sitting on that for a year.
As soon as you said that, I was like, that's a strong argument to start off with. But but she doesn't give up her job, though. She doesn't give up her job.
She doesn't.
Which is good.
She takes a sabbatical.
Yeah.
And is the universe a quaint little town that's lost the meaning of Christmas?
Of course it's lost the meaning of Christmas.
It's run by fascists.
Yeah.
Also, Han has killed people before.
Oh, multiple. Like, yeah. But that's besides the point. I mean, like...
No, I've never seen a Hallmark movie, but I've also never heard of someone being, you know, murdered in one.
Oh, it's definitely happened. I can't tell you one specifically, but I know for a fact.
They're more likely to have, like, cookie baking contests and things like this.
Yeah. Also, I would like to point out that, you know, I feel like in order to be, like, a Christmas-y thing... It sort of has to have something to do with Jesus. Now,
Most of the Hallmark movies don't.
I'm probably the person that's not allowed to talk about this, but the Star Wars holiday special is not called the Christmas special, although I was accidentally calling it that. It is the holiday special because it doesn't actually have anything to do with Jesus.
I don't know. I'm with Rob. I think a lot of the Hallmark movies have a very secular Christmas vibe to them.
But they'd say the word Christmas, though, and his name is Christ. Christmas.
Yeah, it's not actually his name. His name was Jesus.
You know what
Christ
I mean.
Christ is the title.
So my final thoughts on Mims's argument. Very compelling, well structured. I love Mims as a person. It's not a Christmas movie.
I'm sorry, but you're wrong.
I'm going to say this. It may not be a Christmas movie, but it's definitely a Hallmark movie.
I'll accept that.
I hate that. Okay. I hate that solution. No. You're talking about literally one of the best Star Wars movies ever made, and you're comparing it to a Hallmark movie. Oh my God.
Hey, it's
we
the
hope
best
you
Hallmark
keep your
movie.
Hands, arms, feet, and legs in the vehicle. We have adjudicated this.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I guess Rob just ended the episode.
Because we're dropping the mic, man. There's no more to be said.
Thank you for riding along with us. Please watch your step as you exit and remember to take all personal belongings with you.
And what if the I get paid to say things sometimes.
It was insane. It was like the Star Wars special, and it's exactly as long, I think.